Today's shiur is Masechta Yevamos Daf Tzadik Gimel, and we will begin on Daf Tzadik Beis on Beis, four lines from the bottom. Amalei Rish Lakish. In the previous shiur, we had learned that Reb Yanai taught us that B'chabura Nimnu V'gamru, it was decided that Ein Kedushin Taisim B'Yevama, that a woman who was a candidate for Yibam, her husband died without leaving any children, is not a Kedushin mate with her, with a different man who's not Hayavam, is not effective. And the Gemara brought that Rabbi Yochanan commented that there's a Mishnah that clearly corroborates such a position, because the Mishnah taught us the Masechta Kedushin, a number of situations where a man said to a woman that he wants to affect Kedushin with her, even though right now it's not doable, Lachash as Geyer, right now he wasn't even Jewish, right now perhaps she wasn't Jewish, and the last case was Lachash Yachtzloch Yivomech, that Kedushin should be effective after you receive Chalitza from your Yibam, clearly indicating that until such time that she would have chalitza, and as long as she's a yevama, she is not a candidate for being able to be mekudeshes. Clear proof, yevama l'shuk cannot become mekudeshes. Says Rish Lakish that although we learned at the end of the shir that Rabbi Yanai praised Rabbi Yochanan for finding this proof, says Rish Lakish, Amalei Rish Lakish to Rabbi Yochanan, Ilav de Kolsach Gavir Rabba, if not for the fact that you were praised by such a great person like Rabbi Yanai, have a minalach ano, I would tell you that the proof that you brought from that Mishnah is not really conclusive. Because Masnison, that Mishnah represents the opinion of Rabbi Kivihi, who Rabbi Kiva holds the Amar Ein Kedushin Taisa B'Chayv Elavim, as we have Baruch Hashem learned so many times. Rabbi Kiva certainly holds that any woman who is a Chiv Lav Kedushin is not Taifas. So certainly Rabbi Kiva will hold that a Yevama L'Shuk Kedushin is not Taifas, and therefore that Mishnah cannot be a clear proof that everyone holds that Kedushin is not effective by Yevama L'Shuk. Ask the Gemara, Rabbi Kiva, if we're saying that that Mishnah represents the opinion of Rabbi Kiva, if he said to her that the Kedushin that I want to make with you should be effective after you receive Chalitza from your Yavam, according to Rabbi Kiva's opinion, Kedushin should be effective. Because we know Rabbi Kiva's opinion is the Adam Omar, the entire issue, as we said before, in that Mishnah, was that we were describing situations where right now there was something preventing the Kedushin from being effective, and the point of the Kedushin was that when that impediment would be removed, the Kedushin should be effective. So right now it's a Dovah Shlabal Olam. Right now it can't happen. So that Mishnah was teaching us that ain odom makna dovish labalaylam. If right now it can't be effective, it cannot be made effective for later on. Rabbi Kiva doesn't agree with that. The Tanan, the Mishnah says the Masechta Nedarim. The halacha is that a husband could be mefer, could annul the Nedarim that his wife makes. The halacha is also that what a wife earns, she has to give to a husband. So says the Mishnah, Koinim Shani Oisalapicha, if a woman made a neder prohibiting whatever she earns from a husband, says the Tanakama, Ein Tzarech Lahafer. There's no need to make hafara. The neder is not effective in the first place. And as Tosfos points out, even though normally a neder would be effective on an item which somebody only has a shibud, a lien, meaning if I own a house on which I have a mortgage. So there's a lien on the house, but it's a shibud. If I make a nether that I'm giving this house away to someone else, the nether would be effective. So therefore, as Tosfos, yes, we said that a husband has a lien on the masiyadayim, on the earnings of his wife, but isn't a nether effective on a lien? Says Tosfos that the Gemara Masechta Ksubis teaches us that in order to prevent such a situation where a woman will make a nether prohibiting her husband from her earnings, Chazal treated his relationship to his wife's earnings as a relationship not of a lien, but rather as a relationship of ownership, which therefore she has no power to make a nether over those earnings. Rabbi Kiva Ima Yofa. Rabbi Kiva says he should be made for the nether. Shem etadifal of Yoisim and Aroiloi. For says Rabbi Kiva that even though a woman's earnings, a wife's earnings, belong to the husband, however, as we will learn in Masechta Ksubis, that's only on a certain amount more, the certain normal earnings of a woman. Rabbi Kiva holds whatever is beyond that amount belongs to the wife. And therefore, since she may earn that much, that type of earning, which doesn't belong to him, he should make kafara. And as Tosfos explains, essentially, the machloikis between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbanan is who owns the hadofa, who owns the excess of what she earns. The Tanakhama holds that there is no difference between the normal earnings and the excess. They all belong to the husband, and therefore there's no need for hafara. Rabbi Kiva, however, holds the hadofa does belong to the wife. And since that hadofa, there may be a situation of hadofa, therefore Rabbi Kiva tells the husband he should be made for the nether, even though that hadofa is not yet here. She didn't earn that money yet. So we see Rabbi Kiva is concerned even for hadofa shaloi bala oilam. Ask Tosfos that if we're explaining Rabbi Kiva holds that the husband has no rights to the hadofa, to the excess earnings, so then the husband's hafara would anyway not be effective. Because says Tosfos, the halacha is that a husband can be made for the nedarim of his wife only those nedarim that are bein'oi lebein'o, things that affect hers and her relationship. But this is something that has no connection to their relationship. It's purely her earnings, and therefore asked Tosfos that according to this understanding, not only the hafara should not even be effective even if he attempted to make hafara. Answers Tosfos that there are two answers why there is an element of a deinoi lebeino even on the hadofa. One answer Tosfos gives is that since it's hard to be mitzamtzim, it's hard to know exactly which is the earnings and which is the excess, and therefore Chazal said that all of it should be treated like the earnings that the husband has the right to be made for. Another teretz that Tosfos gives is that, as we've been explaining, even though the hadofa belongs to her, that it's treated like nichsei melug. The halacha of nichsei melug is that the nichsei melug belong to the wife, but the peiros, the profits and the produce that come out of the nichsei melug, go to the husband. And therefore the husband certainly still has some sort of connection to the hadofa, which gives him the right to be made for a nether that affects the hadofa. But clearly we're seeing from here that Rabbi Kiva holds the Odom Makna Dava Shaloi Bala Olam. If so, how can we attempt to say that the Mishnah in Masechta Kedushin, which clearly is teaching us Ein Odom Makna Dava Shaloi Bala Olam, goes according to his opinion? Answers the Gemara, Ha'itma Allah, there's another way of explaining this Mishnah in Masechta Nedarim. By meris, the person says that my hands should be kadosh, that everything that my hands produce should be hegdish. The hands are certainly in the world. Therefore, the neder is effective. If so, that the neder is saying that everything is hegdish, so that everything she earns from her hands are hegdish, the Mishnah has nothing to do with Adam Makna Dovish La Balaylam, or Ain Adam Makna Dovish La Balaylam. So we could clearly still say, the Rebbe Akiva holds Ain Adam Makna Dovish La Balaylam, and said that the Mishnah, the Masechta Kedushin, that seems to indicate that Yibum is not, that Kedushin is not affected with a Yivama, represents the opinion of Rebbe Akiva. However, says the Gemara, Pligid Rav Nachman Ben Yitzchak, this understanding of Rav Huna Ben Yehoshua, that explained this Mishnah in Masechta Nedarim, that according, that has nothing to do, even according to Rebbe Akiva, with the issue of Adam Matna Dovah Shalai Balaylam or not, is in disagreement with Rav Nachman Ben Yitzchak. Domer Rav Nachman Ben Yitzchak, Rav Huna holds Kerav, for Rav holds Kerav Yanai, for Rav Yanai holds Kerav Chia, Rav Chia holds Kerebi, Rebi holds Kerav Meya, Rav Meya Kerav Elezer Ben Yaakov, Rav Elezer Ben Yaakov Kerav Akiva, Domer, he holds that all of these Manda Omrim, all of these Shitas hold Adam Makna Dovah Shalai Balaylam, and that's Pshat in the Mishnah there. Says the Gemara, and the Gemara is going to identify each one of these Manda Omrim that we just said, how we know they hold Adam Makna Dovah Shalai Balaylam. Rav Huna Mahi, Ditma, Hamaycha Peiros Bekel Chaveroi, if somebody sells the fruit of his palm tree to someone else, even though the dates have not yet emerged, on Rav Huna, until the produce actually comes into existence, the seller can withdraw. And as Rishonim point out, either one could really withdraw, either the seller or the buyer. It's just more likely the seller will withdraw if he could get a better customer. However, once they come into existence, he can no longer retract. Even though the kinyan was, the transaction was made when the payers weren't yet in the world. Rav Nachman Amar, even after they come into existence, he could still retract because the sale had no validity because it was made when these fruits aren't in existence. Amar Rav Nachman, Medina, even though I, says Rav Nachman, hold that the sale is ineffective because it was made when the payers are not in the world yet, I agree, the shamat v'ochel, that if by remove produce from the tree and ate it, we will not take it away. Since the seller allowed the buyer to take the produce from the tree, he obviously holds that the sale is going to be effective. It's a form of a mechila, and therefore the produce that was already consumed, the seller will have to abide by the terms of the deal. As far as produce that was not eaten, where there was no mechila, Rav Nachman will hold, since the sale is an ineffective sale, therefore that fruit is not part of the sale. So clearly we see from here that Rav Huna holds Adam Makna Dovah Shalai Balaylam, and that's why you could sell the fruits even before they emerged. Rav, the next person that was identified that holds Adam Makna Dovah Shalai Balaylam is Rav. Dom Rav Huna Rav. If somebody says to his friend, this field that I'm about to purchase, when I buy it, I'm giving it to you now, it's an effective kinyan. Even though, when he was telling his friend, I'm giving you a field, he didn't own the field, he hadn't yet bought the field, we see that it could still affect such a transfer. Because of the Makna Dovah Shalai Balaylam. Tosfos goes into a lengthy explanation, why does he have to use the word me'achshav? So one pshat Tosfos says is what the person who's saying this is trying to say is that the transfer of ownership should be retroactive. That means he's not just saying that when I buy the field, at that point I'm going to give it to you. He's saying when I buy the field, I'm going to give it to you retroactive from the moment I owned it. Another pshat that Tosfos gives is that we know that to affect a kinyan, usually we have to have kesef, money transferred, or a shtar. So let's say that the shtar was written today, that I'm writing a shtar to my friend, that when I buy a specific field, at that point I'm transferring it to him. But by the time that happens, the shtar that I'm writing today, the document that I'm writing today to effect such a kinyan, will no longer be in existence. So then the gift transfer cannot be effective. That's why I say me'achshav, I want it to be from today. Today the shtar does exist, and therefore the gift transfer will be an effective transaction. Rabbi Yanai holds like Rabbi Chia that all the makna dovah shel b'olam can be learned from the following. Rabbi Yanai havelei risa. Rabbi Yanai had a sharecropper that have a mice like kansa de peri kamala shapsa, that every Friday he would bring him a basket of fruit. Ha'u yom nagalei. There was one Friday where the sharecropper was delayed, and we have here machlokes Tosfos and the Meiri, whose fruit was it that the sharecropper was bringing. Tosfos learns that it was the sharecropper's fruit. The Meiri learns that it was Rabbi Yanai's fruit. So one Friday the sharecropper is delayed in bringing the fruit. He didn't come on time. Shokel asam peri de beis elai. So, since Rabbi Yanai was concerned that the sharecropper may not arrive until Shabbos begins, and the halach is that on Shabbos, chumas and maisris may not be removed, so what he did was he took off chumas and maisris from using produce that he had in his home, that they should be the trumas and maestras to be taken on behalf of the fruit that would be delivered on Shabbos. Asla kamed Rav Chia. So then Rav Yanai went and asked Rav Chia if he acted properly. Omle shapa avadata. You acted properly. The Tanya, the Pasuk says, L'man tilma liras Hashem alakecha kol hayomim, elu shabasus v'yam toivim. The Pasuk teaches us that on Shabbos and Yom Tov we can be more lenient regarding Trumas and Maestras. Lamai Hilchasa. Ask the Gemara, what are we using the Pasuk to teach us? Ilema, if we're going to say that the Pasuk is teaching us Lemesurei Umeichel, the one is allowed to take off Maestras on Shabbos. Ask the Gemara, Itzrach Kro Lemishri Tilted Rabbonim. The entire Isser of removing Trumas and Maestras on Shabbos is only Osir Midrabonim. The Isser either being Muksa, that fruits which don't have Trumas and Maestras removed from them are Muksa and they are Tevela and Muksa, or the Isser is taking off Trumas and Maestras is Tikkun. It looks like we're making a repair. But all of those concerns only Midrabonim. So it can't be that the Pasuk is coming to tell us that on Shabbos we don't have to be concerned, because the Torah never in the first place said it's Asur. So what is this Pasuk coming to teach us? El Alav Kai Gavna. It's coming to teach us, and this is Rashi's explanation of the Gemara, that the Pasuk is coming to teach us that even though normally the halacha is Ein Adam Makna Dovah Shlo B'la'olam, these fruits were not yet in his possession, he didn't own those fruits, still for Shabbos one is allowed to cover Shabbos, one can affect such a hafroshes trumas and maestras even on fruits that he doesn't own. Why is it considered a dovah shlo b'olam? So certainly according to Tosfos' explanation that it belonged to the oris, so until the oris gave it to Rabbi Yanai, it's certainly not his, and therefore it's a dovah shlo b'olam. But according to the Meiri that said that these fruits always belong to Rabbi Yanai, so why is it considered Dovah Shlo B'la'olam? So says the Tosfos really in explaining that position, that since these fruits weren't in close proximity to him, so they weren't something that he had access to. So even though he owned those fruits, since he didn't have access to those fruits, they're considered a davar shelabala olam. That's Rashi's explanation of the Gemara. Tosfos says that the concern here is not regarding a davar shelabala olam. That's not what the pasuk is teaching us. Because if the pasuk were to teach us that there is no concern when it comes to taking off trumas and maestros regarding a davar shelabala olam, there's no reason to differentiate between Shabbos and the rest of the week. Moreover, explained the Rishonim, if the pasuk is coming to teach us that there is no concern about a davar shelabala olam, how can we have a shita, which is actually the shita that's lalocha lemaisa, that ain't other makna davar shelabala olam, when we clearly have a pasuk teaching us not to be concerned with that? Therefore, Tosfos explains the concern here was shloi menamukav. The halacha is that when one takes trumas and maestros, the product has to be in close proximity. One, if I'm taking trumas and maestros from one barrel of fruit for another barrel of fruit, those two barrels have to be next to each other. Here we had a situation where Rav Yanai was designating fruit in his home to be trumas and maestros on fruit that the sharecropper was still delivering and was certainly not yet in Rav Yanai's home. So we have a problem here of shloim and amukif. And what the pasuk is telling us is that l'kavod Shabbos, we don't have to be concerned about shloim and amukif. Amalei, so Rav Yanai said to Rav Chiya, did I do right? V'karin b'chalma, that night I had a dream, and I read the pasuk that says, kan yirotzitz. The pasuk says, ato, hine betachto loch, amishanes hakonur harotzitz. That the pasuk was giving, that the melech Sancheriv, the king of Assyria, sent a message to Chizkiyahu that his reliance on Mitzrayim is like relying on a konaritz rotzitz, a splintered reed. It's useless. So what Rav Yanai said to Rav Chiya was, I think I didn't paskin, I didn't say the right thing, since I saw this in a cholam. My love, hochakamrili, wasn't I receiving a message? Why you relying on the splintered reed? Says Rav Chiya, loy hochakamrilach. The pasuk that they were referring to was not the pasuk in Melachim, where Kana Rotzitz has a negative connotation. The pasuk they were referring to was the pasuk in Yeshaya. The pasuk says there, Kana Rotzitz lo yishbar, ufishta keya lo yichabena, le'emes yoytzi mishpat, where it refers to Mashiach. And the pasuk is saying that everybody will accept the rule of Mashiach, and he won't have to demonstrate his power. He won't even have to make a minor demonstration like breaking a splintered reed or just extinguishing a small fire. Everybody will automatically accept him. So that's pshat that is trying to tell you how correct your decision was, that there's no room for disagreement. It's like the melucha of Mashiach. Our Gemara taught us that l'kavod Shabbos, l'kavod Oinig Shabbos, we could be mekel. And it's interesting that the Rishonim discuss this chiyuv of Oinig Shabbos. Is it midaraisa or midarabonim? And actually, they wanted to say that it really depends. As Tosfos explained, the heter was that even though trumas and maestros really generally have to be taken off minamukov, produce that's near each other, here we are lenient and it may be shloim minamukov. And the issue is the isser of shloim and amukov taking off produce as trumas and maestros for other produce which is not nearby, is that a deraisa? Is that a isser deraisa? Isser derabanan? If we'll say it's isser deraisa, and here we're being lenient, l'kavod oinig Shabbos, we'll have a proof that oinig Shabbos is a chi of deraisa. But if the isser of shloim and amukov is only an isser midrabanan, we'll only have a proof that oinig Shabbos is a mitzvah midrabanan, which supersedes that isser midrabanan. We won't have a proof that oinig Shabbos is a chiv deraisa. It's interesting to note how far the Shail Tshuvas Avnei Nezer takes this chiyuv of Oinik Shabbos. He says, even though the halach is that during the time of Bein HaMetzarim, during the 3 weeks, we're not allowed to make a Shechiyanu, he says that let's say one receives a new fruit that he hasn't eaten, that when he eats such a fruit, he has to make a Shechiyanu, and it's during one of the Shabbosos of the 3 weeks, he's allowed to eat the fruit and make a Shechiyanu. All the covered Oinik Shabbos. He does say that if Tisha B'Av comes out on Shabbos, so even though we don't fast on Shabbos, if Shabbos is actually Tesh B'Av, that Shabbos one should not make a Shechiyanu. Our Gemara compared Shabbos to the pasuk of Achalt L'fnei Hashem L'kech V'makom Shayivcha L'shak and Shom, Master the Gancha Tiroshcha V'tzarecha B'Koris B'Korcha V'tzoyncha. The pasuk is speaking about Achilas, eating of Maaser. The eating on Shabbos is compared to the eating of Maaser. It's called the eating of Shabbos is called Liyira. It has an element of Yira in it. So some of us explain what's the element of Shabbos connected to Yira. One pshat is that since on Shabbos one is generally more relaxed, and when one is more relaxed, he chas v'sholem may become lax in his Yira Shemayim. So the pasuk says, chas v'sholem, don't allow that to happen. Another pshat is that since we know there's so many complicated and different Hilchos Shabbos, how could a person be confident that he would not chas v'sholem be mechalel Shabbos? Leman tilmed lira. Through Yiras Hashem, a person is careful not chas v'sholem to be mechalel Shabbos. However, I saw the Mefarshim go deeper in explaining this comparison between Achilas Shabbos and Achilas Maaser. The Maaser was eaten in Yerushalayim by the Kohanim who were Oivdei Hashem. One should recognize that the Suda Shabbos, the food that he eats on Shabbos, is also an Avoidas Hashem. The Suda Shabbos is not just a meal. It's an Avoidas Hashem. It's a Suda Shabbos. Another pshat is that when a person ate Maaser in Yerushalayim, he came to the recognition of who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, that environment of Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash brings one to Yira Shamayim, especially seeing the Kohanim and the Levim doing the Avodah, eating food that's given to them through HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Meshulchan Gevoyu Kazachu. Teaches us the Gemara, so should one learn from the Achila on Shabbos. Shabbos is a time to reflect and recognize that everything we eat and everything we receive is Liman Tilmad Liris as Hashem, comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. However, says the Sfas Emes, that recognition that we achieve through the Achila of the Suda Shabbos has to have influence, and it's supposed to affect us not just for Shabbos, but it's supposed to carry us through the entire week. Leman tilmud liras Hashem alakecha kol hayomim. All of the days of the week shall we be affected by the lessons that we learn from the Suda Shabbos. Continues the Gemara. Now the Gemara proves that Rebbe holds Odom Makna Dov Shalai Balaylam. Rebbe, the Tanya, the Pasuk says, Lo Sazgir Ever Aladonov. Don't deliver a slave to his master. Rebbe Omer, what is the pasuk teaching us? That somebody purchased a slave on a condition that will free him. Hey chidami, exactly what happened here? Omer Rav Nachman Yitzchak, the cost of lay that somebody wrote to the slave, lika eshachecha, when I will purchase you, harei atzmach kenulach ma'achshav, I'm buying you already free from now. Even though he doesn't own the slave, how can one free a slave that he doesn't even own? We see from here that Adam Machm Davish Labalaylam. Remeir, how do we know that he holds Adam Machm Davish Labalaylam? The Tanan, as we learned, Haimel Isha, Reyat Mekadeshli, somebody says to wife, to woman, I'm making Kedushin in you, Lachash Tzgair after I convert, Lachash Tzgair after you convert, Lachash Tzgair after he's an Eved, after I'm freed, She's a shifcha. Lach teshtachri after you will be freed. Lach shemus balech. Right now she's an ashes ish. She can't marry anyone else. But he says it should be effective after your husband passes away. Lach shtam tzachoysech. If the man is married to her sister, which as we're going to learn and have learned, a man may not marry his wife's sister. But he's saying after your sister, and this woman was, the sister was or is his wife. Lach shiach tzachivamech. The case that we began the shiur with, that after your yovim does chalitza, and all of these cases, enim kedushas, the kedushin doesn't take place because it's a davish labal olam. Ramei oimer mukedushas, even though it's a davish labal olam, because Ramei clearly holds odam makna davish labal olam. Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov holds that odam makna davish labal olam. The Tanya, we learned in a brisa. The brisa discusses under what circumstances one could take truma from one portion, from some produce for other produce. And the Braisa says that one cannot take truma from produce that's connected to the ground for produce that's not connected, or vice versa. So says the Braisa, the Tanya, yes, I'll came, Amr Blaz Ben Yaakov. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov said, "Afilam Omar, prayers arugazu talushim. Let the cut throat of this row become truma of prayers zumuchubarim for the attached produce of the next row. A prayers arugazu muchubarim, a prayers zug talushim lechishiyuvi shlush v'yitlushu." And he said the truma designation will go into effect when the fruit grows a third, because the halacha is that fruit that's not grown a third is not mechuyiv. Trumas and maaser should be removed from them. So that when they grow a third and they're picked, at that point the truma should be effective. The viu shlish v'netlishu, and ultimately that happens. Tvar of kayam. So again, we see that one could take truma and maasers on a davish labal oilam, because Reb Elazar ben Yaakov clearly holds all the makna davish labal oilam. Reb Akiva. How do we see Rabbi Akiva? And this is what we started to share with. That Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara thought, holds other makna davish labal olam. And although, as we learned, Rav Huna disagreed with that understanding of Rabbi Akiva's opinion, Rav Nachman ben Yitzchak clearly believes that Rabbi Akiva holds that other makna davish labal olam. The Tanan, as we learned the Mishnah from Masech Nedarim, Kainim Shani Yais Lepicha, a woman makes a neder that her earnings should be usher to a husband, and a Tzarch Lehofer. The husband doesn't have to make Hafaras Nedarim. That's Tanakam's position. Kiva Aymer, Yofer, he should do Hafaras Nedarim, Shema Tadifal of Yoisman Aroiloi. Because since the Hadofa, the earnings above her normal wages do belong to her. So in order for that neder to not be effective, the husband has to do afaras nedarim. Those excess earnings aren't yet in the world. Clearly we see that Rabbi Akiva, at least according to Rabbi Nachman's understanding of Rabbi Akiva, holds that other mak nedavish labal oilam. However, the halacha is that ain't odam mak nedavish labal oilam. And explain the Mefarshim that there's a general rule that whenever an Amira lists a number of Tanoim who all follow the same opinion, what he's trying to say is that all of these Tanoim have that opinion, but that's not the opinion to be followed lahaloch lamaisa. Rather, the halacha is that ain other makna davish labal olam. In fact, I saw that the Mefarshim asked a question. If indeed the halacha is that ein adam makna davish labal olam, we know that the Torah discusses, tells us the episode of Yaakov buying the bechira from Esav. But ask the Mefarshim, if ein adam makna davish labal olam, how could he buy it? The bechira is only relevant when the father dies, and who will get the double portion of the Yerusha? Yitzchak was certainly still alive. So Rashi says that the Bechor the Bechor portion that Esav was selling to Yaakov was not the right to inherit a double portion of Yitzchak's estate, but was rather the privilege of doing the Avodah. That at that time the Avodah was done by Bechorim, and Esav sold that privilege to Yaakov. So that was a Dovah Habala Olam. The Rivash answers that this halacha of Ein Adam Makna Dovah Shlabel Olam was only given to us by Har Sinai. The episode of Yaakov and Esav took place before Kabbalah Satayra. At that point, the halacha was that Adam Makna Dovah Shlabel Olam. The Rosh answers that if a transaction includes in it not just the effective transaction, but it also includes a shvuah, that is more powerful than an ordinary transaction, and therefore is effective even on a davar shelo olam. Yaakov had extracted from Esav a shvuah, as the pasuk says, "Hishavli kayoyim hazeh." Therefore, even though it was a davar shelo olam, it was an effective transaction. The Ktzais HaChoshen and the Sivas answer that when we learn that the halacha is that Ein Odom Makna Dovah Shloi B'Loilam, that's referring to making a positive sale. What over there happened was that Esav was relinquishing his rights. Relinquishing is an issue that could be effective even on a Dovah Shloi B'Loilam, and that's why that Mechira was effective. We learned at the beginning of our perek that a woman can get married based on the testimony of a single witness. Ask the Gemara, "Boy, my name Rav Sheshes, Eid Echad B'Yavama Mahu." What's the law regarding the testimony of an Eid Echad concerning a Yibam? Can a woman have Yibam? That means, can a woman rely on the testimony of an Eid Echad to have Yibam? Tamed Eid Echad. Why do we rely on an Eid Echad? Is Mishum the Milsa David Legluyim by Meshaker? Something that's ultimately going to be revealed. If the man, if the husband is still alive, it's ultimately going to be known, and therefore we trust the Eid Echad. Hachinami like Meshaker. Since if this person says your husband died and therefore you should have Yibum, that's something that is going to be ultimately known, and therefore we can rely on it. Adama, Tamed Eid Echad. Why do we rely on an Eid Echad? Mishum de'i daika mitzvah. As we learned so many times, the woman doesn't rely completely on that. What she does is that she will properly investigate herself. V'hocha. Kivin de'zimna de'rachmalei. Since this woman is well familiar with her brother-in-law, and she may be fond of him, loy daika mitzvah, she won't do the proper investigation. Ask Tosfos. Haven't we learned so many times that the basis of relying on Eid Echad is because daika mitzvah, that a woman does the proper investigation? So how could the Gemara have this question? Says Tosfos, of course the basis for relying on Eid Echad is daika mitzvah, that the woman does a careful investigation before she gets remarried. The question of Al Gemara, however, says Tosfos, is what is the rationale behind Daika Mitzvah? Is the rationale behind Daika Mitzvah because it's a Milsa Davida Legluya, and therefore even in the case of Yibum, it's a Milsa Davida Legluya, and therefore an Eid Echad should be acceptable? Or is the basis of Daika Mitzvah because she knows that she should do a careful, objective investigation? Here, because she has a relationship, she's fond of her brother-in-law, she will not do that proper investigation. Amar Sheshes. So Sheshes says, Tenesua, we really have the answer in our Mishnah. It says in our Mishnah, Amala Meis Beneich, if they told the woman your son died, Vakach Meis Balech, and then your husband died, Vnesyabma, and based on that she did Yibum, because based on what she was told, at the moment of death, her husband had no children, and therefore she's a candidate for Yibum. Vakach Amalai Chilof HaDvarim, and afterwards, they told her it was just the opposite. Her husband died first, and therefore she should not have had Yibam. And there was an Isser Eishes Ach, an Isser Karis, Taitse, she should leave the Yavam, Velad Rishvach Mamzim. And if she had children from the Yavam, the child is a Mamzim. Now, Hechidami, exactly what is the case that our Mishnah is referring to? Ilema, Treyutrei, if will suggest that there were two witnesses that said that the husband died first. And the two witnesses that said that the child died first. My chazot the samchasahani, samchahani. Why are we relying more on the witnesses that say that the husband died first? Why don't we rely more on the witnesses that say that the child died first? Ask Taisvis, in every situation of trei when we have two sets of witnesses contradicting each other, we follow a chazaka. This woman had a chazaka that she's not allowed to marry her yavam. So why don't we follow that chazaka? Answers Taisvis, that even though we have such a chazaka, in a case where the people who are the affected parties, and for in other words, in our case, the yavam and the yavama are saying we're certain that the child died before the father, there we don't follow chazaka. That's Taisvis Teretz. Other Rishonim give different truths. The Ritva says that the Gemara doesn't certainly would agree that based on the chazaka she should leave the yavam. But our Mishnah, as we learned so many times, spoke about all other requirements that she has to lose. Haksuba and Peros and Belos. Why does she lose all those things? The Chazaka, on the contrary, says that she should get a Ksuba. Another pshat that I saw is that our Mishnah, our Gemara is already referring to a situation where she had Yibam. Since she already had Yibam, that original chazaka is no longer the effective chazaka. If anything, the chazaka is that she's married to the Yavam, and the chazaka says that she should remain married to him. One more pshat that I saw is that since we're dealing with a situation where the husband certainly died, so the chazaka can no longer be followed. When such a serious change of the status quo happened, we don't say follow chazaka. Chazaka says status quo. We can't say status quo in a case where we know that there has been certainly a change. The husband died. Furthermore, even if we're going to suggest that she should leave the yavam, because we'll have to be concerned that the husband died first, our Mishnah said that the children she has from the yavam are mamzerim. Safek mamzahu. They're not for sure mamzerim, it's a sofik. The sofik being who died first. The chitaim, if you'll say loidok, our Mishnah really meant that the child is a sofik mamzer. It didn't mean to say that it's a vade mamzer. You can't say that that's how our Mishnah learns. For midik tani sefer, the end of the second part of the Mishnah, the third case of the Mishnah, taught us that when a woman died on the assumption that her husband, when a woman married on the assumption that her husband died, there the Mishnah said, we differentiate between, and then it turned out that when she got remarried, her husband was actually still alive. So we said the children were born before the husband died, are mamzerim. The children that were born to the second husband after the first husband died are not mamzerim. So we said, Arishin mamzer, va'achron ena mamzer, shmami no dafki ketonis. We see to what great detail our Mishnah is teaching us the halacha. Elalav shmamino. Rather, what do we see in our Mishnah? Chad. There was only one witness that came and said that either your husband died first or your son died first. And we accepted that testimony even regarding Yibam. And when she was told that that the child predeceased the father, she had Yibam. So we have a proof that one witness could be accepted, and therefore we can understand the continuation in the Mishnah, the Tamid Osbe Trey Achashua, and then two witnesses came and refuted what the Eid Echot said. Halav Halchi, if it wouldn't have been such a situation where two Eidim were refuting the Eid Echot, Mehemon, an Eid Echot is Nemon, not only regarding saying that to a woman that her husband died, but it's also Nemon that based on his testimony, a woman could enter a Yibum marriage.